Hi, and welcome to a Dad's Path podcast. We're real dads solving everyday problems. Each week we tackle issues that dads everywhere face and deliver actions you can take right away. Subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and go to adadspath.com to get our free newsletter exclusively for dads. Our goal is to help you make fatherhood count. Dad on. Hello, and welcome to another episode of A Dad's Path podcast. I'm Will Bronstein. Today I'm here with Shane Trotter, the author of Setting the Bar, Preparing Your Kids to Thrive in an Era of Distraction, Dependency, and Entitlement. You can learn more at trottershane.com and find his book, Setting the Bar, wherever good books are sold. So welcome, Shane.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here, Will.
Awesome. Well, I'm really excited. I was telling you before we started that a good friend of mine gave me this book, Setting the Bar, and you know, it looked like it was about education. And at one level, it is about education. But if you dig just a little bit deeper, it's about so much more. Really, it's about, you know, your kids and how to raise good kids, especially with all these, I would say, new influences that we haven't had before. So it really resonated with me. And that's why I wanted to bring you on, Shane. I'm really excited. The first chapter, I think you called Kids These Days. I want to start there real quick because we talk about some of the challenges, but not all of them. So one of the challenges I think you identify is smartphones, technology, and how that's challenging when you're raising kids. But another aspect, you know, we talk about that. The part we don't talk about is the weakening of communities, right? Like when we were kids or our parents were kids, there was a stronger maybe community push than there is now, or that was maybe affected us more, I guess I would say. So I'd love to just kind of bounce that idea a little bit and chat with you on that. You know, what's caused the weakening of communities? What does that even mean? You know, like I can't form a community. I'm a dad, right? Like,
yeah, it's a little overwhelming to think you have to create a community because it doesn't exist in the old way. But yes, the old adage, it takes a village, that used to be just there for us. And one of the things that makes parenting such a challenge today is the environment is so novel. The number of pulls and stimuli and new developments are coming at such a rapid pace, a far more rapid pace than we've ever seen before. So it's very hard to look at past models. And even more than that, there's far less community around you to clarify and support you in this. Because of the growth of moral relativism, there's less of a community-wide norm structure to help guide you towards what might be more fruitful behaviors. So that's a real challenge.
Yeah, no, for sure. And when you say moral relativism, you mean that's different levels of morality based on kind of who you are? Or can you go into that?
Broadly, you say the word morals and people tend to think of kind of this very rigid virtue like Puritanism. But I like to think of morals kind of from a Jonathan Haidt perspective. He's a psychologist who's a big influence. And it's more like the social technology that helps us connect with people and understand what's going to be more fruitful behaviors. But more than that, connect at the broad level. Morals don't have to be, you know, puritanical in any way. It's just kind of a value structure that bonds you to other people and guides your behavior. One way I've said it before is, you know, a young Spartan male is going to be terrified to miss a battle. But, you know, youth today, young men today, the idea of war, they're going to look at very differently. And that's the power of culture. So yeah, culture more than morals is probably a way to look at it. And our cultural structure, I said it takes a village, but the village has less influence than ever on our kids. Their influences are coming from bigger, broader areas, far outside your own neighborhood often.
Yeah, that's the challenge and a huge one, you know, and to bring it down at a very micro level in terms of where I've seen it happen is just last night I was at a neighborhood event and one of the moms was like, no ice cream because an ice cream truck came. And we probably would have done ice cream, even though there were already popsicles. So it's not like I was, you know, we were saying no dessert. This is like extra, extra dessert, right? So
sure. Second round.
Right. But it's that type of, you know, we're friends with that family and they're, you know, they do a better job of being health conscious, I would say, with their kids than we do in terms, you know, fewer desserts, et cetera. So that's not the first time, but they're encouraging us in a positive way to be a better influence. You know, it's almost like a community standard, like you're saying, at this very, very tiny level.
Sure.
So that was a positive because it's a challenge. You know, how do you have community standards of the community?
Yeah. And what you're seeing is actually almost a reverse peer pressure sometimes, like a reverse pressure where, at least in my own experience, where I feel like the norms that are in place are often rather destructive. So not only are your impulses being hacked and played on by brilliant mechanisms, brilliant technology, brilliant marketing sources, but then the society around you that should be kind of a buffer against that, to, you know, to help pull you in a different direction, that's actually hurting you because it's telling you to give in to the impulses. It's telling you that Cinnamon Toast Crunch and Pop-Tarts for breakfast is normal. It's telling you that giving a smartphone to a 9-year-old is normal. And these are really hard things for a parent on their own to fight. So yeah, that is the challenge.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I think your book does really, really well, because you give, you know, great examples on the ground of what an individual dad or parent can do, you know, to help their kids, to teach their kids to go with the system, but fight the system. And at the same time, you're giving broader ideas of, hey, this is how you can make big change. And the two aren't necessarily related. They're not necessarily mutually exclusive either.
Sure.
But, you know, they both take effort. And I think it's important to have both. You know, that's how you make real change. And if you have younger kids, that'll help them in making our society better, you know?
Yeah, it's a real dance.
That's a good word. Yeah.
But I think first and foremost, it is good to recognize that going with the flow will not be fruitful for your children and even for you and your children's relationship long term. You know, that's been the luxury of the majority of history, is that you can go with the flow and you're going to be more or less pretty well off if you do that, at least developmentally. Certainly not if you're in Nazi Germany, but, you know, at least
right.
For the most part, developmentally, your kids are going to be well off. The habits that are inculcated through society are going to be fairly good. And I don't think that's necessarily the case anymore.
And that's a challenge, right? Because we can either be okay with that and say, well, you know, our kid will be like everyone else and they won't be worse, right? Or you say, hey, these are the values that are important to me. And I know values is a loaded word, but these are the things that are important, that I think are important for my kid to be a successful adult, how I define success, you know, not making a lot of money, but being able to do what they want to do to live the life they want to live.
Yes. And at the same time, there's this preacher's kid phenomenon where if you're too shielded, they over rebel. And there's also the, well, one of the most important things for your kid is to be part of a community. So to just, you know, be different and almost, you know, to demonize the rest of the world is not the best route either. And, you know, it's a real dance.
No, yeah. So when you say community, the obvious one, the one that pops in my head is religion, joining a church or synagogue. What other communities do you think are fruitful? How do you think about that?
You know, it's kind of like one way to look at that is the internet dating in the modern world is the way that if you've had to date in the last 10 years and you come out of college, you know, it's kind of a striking thing all of a sudden. Like, oh, wow, you know, everyone isn't attractive in my age where I work now. Often they are, you know, 50. So it's a different world. And it's like, where do I meet people? And the default now is like internet dating. But, you know, where else could you? You figure out what your values are. What, perhaps it's at the gym. Perhaps there's a specific sort of, you know, so you look at your hobbies and a good way of looking at this is, you know, what are the habits I want to incorporate in my life? And where are people already doing those habits? And so, you know, that's a place you can find community. As a strength and conditioning coordinator, I'm not thrilled with a lot of aspects of CrossFit. I certainly think they've been great for physical therapy, physical therapist, bottom line. But they do a phenomenal job of creating culture. And I think the net effect is far more positive than negative on the people who join a CrossFit facility. Other places are just the school itself can be such, you know, public schools, they have such amazing potential to make positive changes. That's part of my book. I really tried to show that there's this immense potential in our schools to help lead positive changes and help parents out and clarify more fruitful norms. But also they're a great opportunity for building community. You know, my oldest son, he is a kindergartner. And so the dad's club at the school is phenomenal. You know, and there's community dad camp out coming up. And there's all these other options related to youth organizations. I feel like when you have kids who are kindergarten and above, there becomes a lot of options for community activity just related to their activities.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you. Those are great examples. You know, both for you and your kids. You know, if you have a sport you do, like I like to play tennis, I'll do that at night.
Yes.
Once a week, you know, after bedtime, and that's with a group, right? It's a community. It turns into a community over time. Hobbies, if you play games or you want to, like you say, get involved in school. Yeah, I mean, so many options, which is good because, again, in my head, when you say community, it's like, well, I don't know if I want to join a church right now or if that's going to fit in. But it's not that complicated, you know? And
it's not. It takes some battling inertia because it's much easier to stay inside and watch TV. But it's out there. It really is.
Yeah. And the other aspect of like anything, you know, you can only get out what you put in.
Sure.
You know, you can't just go once to play tennis and say, yeah, this community isn't supporting, right? It takes time to become part of a community and to add that value. And that's where the sort of positive peer pressure, as you said, or reverse peer pressure, however you put it, you know, can be so beneficial.
Sure. Well, and one thing I would put in parents' ears is, I think this often, you know, watch your kids and look at the different stages they're at and how they're constantly trying new things and having to learn, you know, they're bad at riding a bike. They fall. And then they get it. They're bad at throwing and catching. Everything is new. And you're just constantly throwing them into new environments. Kindergarten, new environment, all these new kids. Eventually, like a youth sport, they show up, they don't know anyone. And they're constantly having to do that. If you will remember, if you look back, like you constantly had to do that. And something as adults, it's like we hit age 22 and we're like, well, I don't have to do that anymore. No awkward moments. And I don't think that's healthy.
Yeah.
so it's probably a great model for your kids for you to go be a novice at a few things and fumble your way through them too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We talk about that all the time about modeling and how you can, you know, say what you want to say to your kids and it won't matter because they're going to do what you do.
Yes.
You know, I know you have a chapter on that too, you know, about parenting, I think mentally and physically healthy kids. And that's how the chapter starts, just with a ton of modeling observations. If you want your kid to eat healthy, let them see you eat healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my wife and I are fairly health conscious. We both work out. And it's been really fun to see that our kids already, you know, they'll go grab, you know, they have like a little toy broom and they put it across their back and they do squats. It's just like out of nowhere, you'll just stumble across them doing these things. It's pretty funny. But it shows just how much gets through.
And that's right. I mean, and that's where, you know, parents can make a big difference outside of school, just how we act and what's acceptable, you know, for us, right? You know, we have our own base levels. I know one of the things that you chatted about in the book that I found really interesting was you call it the dysfunctional youth development paradigm. Just,
yeah,
you know, low expectations in kids, blunted feedback, victimization, deferred responsibility, empty values. And some of those things can happen and are fine, but some of those are becoming more the rule than the exception, it seems like.
Yeah. And I think that gets back to the parenting too. I think a big issue is that in the lack of community, it's very easy to kind of have a lack of purpose as a parent. That purpose isn't inherent in the cultural ecosystem like it may have been before. And often as a parent, you grow up and you don't have a passion, you know, so you're not chasing a passion. You're not interested in chasing your own hobbies and projects. And I think that's really healthy for parents to maintain passions and hobbies. And in the absence of them, I think what often happens is that there's this lack of purpose and the kid comes in and they fill that void. And obviously my children and my wife are the most important things in my life. But one of the best things I can do for them is to also maintain this clear sense of values, this clear sense of passion and purpose. Because if nothing else, it leads me not to deify them. And I found that basically when there's a void of passion, that's where the over-provide, over-protect paradigm comes in, where it's just like, I'm gonna take care of them. They're the entire world. And I don't put any developing them into any specific type of person ahead of just giving them what makes them happy in each moment. So when you clarify that sense of, first of all, like I'm raising an adult, a specific type of person that I think will be admirable and capable of certain things that I find important. When you put that first, the rest tends to fall in line. But when that is murky and vague, I think that's when it's really easy to just say, well, you know, I just want them to be happy. And that tends to not lead kids to be happy, I would argue.
I think that's right. You know, oh, you're unhappy. Let me get you this thing. Let me get you this toy. Now are you happy?
Yeah.
Or, you know, for 4 minutes, you know, like it. And we're not creating adults either, as we know, like our kids are going to turn into adults. We're helping to guide them. You know, we're hoping we can guide them, you know, in a path to not make the mistakes we've made, to, you know, learn some of the lessons we learned, hopefully less painfully.
Yeah.
Though, you know, you also talk about being anti-fragile, which is really interesting to me, you know, where you want to protect your kids, but if they don't get knocked down, they're not going to be protected, you know?
Yes. Well, and I think that's, so, you know, chapter 3 is anti-fragility and chapter 4 is the danger of overprotection. And then in the final chapter, I actually cite the longitudinal study by Glenn Elder, where he shows that people going through the Depression and World War II, this amazing generation, people who met their first great adversity too late tended to be crushed by it. But people who met their first major adversities earlier in life were improved by those adversities. So there's this real actual phenomenon where you do not want to wait too late to hit real adversity because, you know, whether you like it or not, it's coming. I mean, gosh, talk to a 60, 70-year-old. I mean, they're just witnessing everyone they care about dying. That's a hard thing. Like, real hard adversity is coming in your life, and you want to be prepared for it to some degree. I like Justice Roberts' quote that I put in there, too, where he kind of explains, you know, I want you to have these hurt feelings. I want you to do this, because they are the experiences that develop these qualities that are going to be so essential in your life. There are things you can't learn from a textbook. You know, life is messy.
I found that inspiring too. That was a great passage saying, you know, if you want to be passionate about justice, you need to be hit with injustice. You know, something to that degree, something like that, right? Like,
yes.
He said it a little better because he's a Supreme Court justice, but but that's the idea.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's the blue dot experiment, which really brings that home, I think. Just quickly for listeners, the blue dot experiment is they bring people to a computer screen, thousands of people, and they showed them 1,000 dots, and the people had to decide whether they are blue or purple. And at the first 100 dots was about 50-50. But gradually, it got to a point where, by definition, there were almost zero blue dots. And in the last 100, even though it was almost all purple, people still found a 50-50 distribution. They found the same thing when asking people whether faces were threatening or not, or whether business proposals were ethical or not. And so that's a real thing. If your life is too cozy, too comfortable, you find discomfort somewhere. and so it's kind of an amplifying effect, a concept creep effect.
Yeah, no, that was a super interesting sort of outcome from that experiment. And you're right. I mean, it paints that picture pretty well. So when you think about creating adversity, I mean, maybe that's not quite the right word, but how do you challenge your young kids? You know, how do you start getting them set now, you know, as a kindergarten, for example, or maybe in a year or two? Or how are you thinking about that as a parent yourself, Shane?
Expectations first and foremost, like really, you know, having actual expectations. And, you know, for example, big Carol Dweck fan, very big on praising effort and, you know, encouraging them to, one of my favorite phrases is, all right, you can figure it out. And so letting them, not solving every issue for them when it arises, plenty of issues will, you know, my children are 4 and 5, they're close enough in age, they play a lot together. And I want them to, I try to interfere as little as I can, you know, when they argue, and it's constant. I want them to settle it more often than not. I want them to play outside. And when they fall, I praise them for when they're tough and they get back playing, you know, little things like that. So I think it's expectations, and it's a consistent, intentionally not seeking to solve their problems for them. I like to empathize, to say, oh boy, that's tough. I'm sorry, buddy. What do you think you're going to do about it? You know, so putting it back on, so letting them learn that problem solving skill.
That's awesome. No, I think that's right. And that'll teach them those lessons and, you know, on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, I'd add to that, you can have sort of base expectation levels of skills as well. You know, to me, you need to learn to swim.
Yes.
Like swimming is a...
Yes.
Non-negotiable. Riding a bike, that's another one.
Yes.
Yeah, it takes time, you know, and so it's kind of cool. It's a big project. You fail and fail and fail until slowly you're succeeding, until, you know, something happens and now you can do it.
Sure, exactly. Or even, you know, so one of the things is our children, both of them know that when they come in, They're expected to take out their lunch. They're expected to put it in the dishwasher. They're expected to take out their folder, put it in a place because mommy's going to check it. And that started at, you know, ages three, I think. And so you just kind of gradually, I think chores are one of the things that that too many people have let go by the wayside. It's an important thing. And they don't have to start at age eight. Kids can be building up in their own ways, brushing their own teeth, putting their own clothes on. You know, Ace, my oldest, he gets with me after dinner every night, and I have him make his own peanut butter sandwich, which he's super proud of. You know, little things like that.
Sure. No, that's great. Yeah, chores are another great example there. I was talking to a dad on an earlier podcast about chores and allowance, and, you know, have basically come to the conclusion for me that, you know, I don't want to pay for chores. I don't want to give allowance for chores.
Sure.
There are things we all need to contribute to the household. You know, I don't get paid for the dishes I do or for the times I'm folding his laundry. So anyway, that's, I think, another way. And it's important to have something that is separate from allowance if you are into allowance, just because, again, it is a mini community. This is your family that you're building, that you're all, building towards. So it's important. Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. But the one thing I would say, and so I think it's important to, you know, to have those things that are just basic expectations, not related. You know, my wife and I talk about that. We're not yet at an age, but one thing that has us leaning towards allowance is we would like to pull back from financial support gradually too, and lead them to manage their own accounts. So I know that there's like youth debit cards now. Like Greenlight, I think is what it's called, that are effective for that. So that's also a skill that we're leaning towards trying to add. I don't know when, a couple of years.
Yeah. No, someone I was talking to, I think this was the same dad, paid his kids, I think $10 a book report or something like that.
Oh, cool.
So it was separate from chores. Uh-huh.
Sure.
It was extra work, but it was something, hey, if you're going to do this, you know, you're learning, it's something that I as a father want to support, or we as parents want to support. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like that idea, almost as in making the chores. This is part of being a part of a family. But there's also I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, interesting distinction. Because you're right. I mean, when we talk about where we started, or where, you know, a lot of your book is centered upon, is schooling.
Yes.
And one thing that has never been very good in schools is education about budget. And that's probably the most important thing we need as adults, right? Like, if we can't afford our groceries or our rent, I mean.
Sure. And my goodness, I wish I knew about compound interest when I was 18.
Right? I mean, all those things. I mean, so no, I mean, I think that's right on. And that gets to, you know, where, you know, there are a lot of things we learn in school. We expect our kids to learn in school, and they're already kind of holes that we know about. And I mean, again, budgeting is a great one, where just in school, you don't really learn about budgeting or how to handle money. And that's a great opportunity for us parents. But, you know, I want to just take a bigger picture now real quick before we go, because I know we're reaching the end of our time. And when we talk about schooling and all the changes you can make, I know a lot of us are a little bit nervous about schools and what happens as our kids get older, because we don't have that much insight into what's happening in the school. You know, how was school today? Good. What'd you do? Nothing. Right? Like, you know, even if you have more of a conversation, you don't really know everything going on. So, and as parents, I think we have that right. We want to have that right. We need to know what's going on, what's being taught to our kids. So how do you wrestle that, you know, being a good dad, which is on the ground where you're teaching your kid every day, and trying to change the system? Is that even the right word? I mean, I'm curious how you do it. And then as a, you know, average dad myself, what I should be doing, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I've had a unique opportunity in that respect, because I'm within the system, yet a great critic of the system. So working in the schools, I've had the opportunity to really affect change. You know, I've written proposals. My son's elementary school has actually jumped on an initiative I wrote. So they're making changes that I've pushed. They're bringing me in to do parent education, talks with the parents. So that's great if you can do something like that. That's atypical. You're right. And what you also spoke to was the delicate dance of, I want to give them personal space and the freedom to own their own world, and yet I need to have some sort of influence if things aren't done in a certain way. It is such a delicate dance. And we could talk education all day. You know, some of the issues in education are the way that, rather than have clear expectations and a clear vision of what you're trying to create and what practices, I'll give you an example. I think that high schoolers should all be emailing their teachers for themselves. there are exceptions. There's the common sense exceptions. But for the most part, like, your high schooler should be in charge of, you know, conducting their own life. I've had three requests to write letters of recommendation in the last week, and two of them came from the parent. That blew my mind. We're talking about someone asking for a letter of recommendation to go to college. And so the schools have kind of cowed down and not clarified those expectations. And so in that regard, parent influence has been negative at times. But
right.
You're not that parent if you're listening to this show. You've got to, you know, make your voice heard as to telling your, you know, we would like more guidance on dealing with tech and what the research is. Ask these questions. Let your schools know that these are things that they should be giving parents guidance on, that they should themselves know. They need to be familiar with, you know, what the American Academy of Pediatrics is saying about screen time, about the family screen time development plans that they recommend, and so many other things, that this needs to be a community conversation. And that's much of my initiative. That's what I focused on, is like, hey, we've got to work with our parents. We need to do parent education. We need to get a community together to reestablish norms, because norms, they are what give parents freedom and what clarify the expectations that make children more successful in their future. So that's where my focus would be as a parent.
Awesome. Shane, this is, I mean, you really went through a lot of great topics, both in your book and then in this little 30-minute podcast. But to me, one of the big takeaways is expectations. You know, you said that multiple times, and I think that's something that could be lacking in our society and lacking in our kids, and can be really harmful when it's not there. You know, if you don't have the expectation that someone, you know, you do your homework, that you do what you say you're going to do, whatever those values are, basic ones. I mean, as we said, your kid is going to become an adult whether you like it or not.
Yes.
Right? unless, thank God, if it happens. But they're going to become an adult. So you're either going to give them the tools or make them as equipped as they can be, or not, you know. And if you're listening to this podcast, everybody who's listening, you're doing your job. You know, it doesn't mean you're perfect.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not, but I'm learning and we're learning together. And that's kind of what it's about.
Yeah. I mean, if I can just add there, you know, people hear expectations and they might hear that and think that's rather restrictive sounding. But, you know, to give freedom, you have to develop expectations, or else the freedom becomes its own form of tyranny. So that is what frees you to live well in freedom. If you haven't developed any disciplines or any sense of what expectations should be, you'll stay up to all hours. You'll do all these things that hurt you worse in the long run.
Yeah. So well put. Well, thanks again, Shane. Again, the name of the book is Setting the Bar. I couldn't recommend it more. And you can learn more at trottershane.com, where you can find his newsletter and order the book. And then you can also find the book wherever good books are sold. So thanks again, Shane. This was really wonderful.
Thank you, Will. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Take care.
If you liked our podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. If you haven't joined us yet, go to adadspath.com to get our free newsletter exclusively for dads. And do you know a friend who might like this podcast? Send it on. We want to help as many dads as possible make fatherhood count. Dad on.